This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
713-572-4610. Corey's on the northwest side. He's been holding a while. Corey, welcome into Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Good morning. And I wanted to just, it's a two-part thing. I wanted to say that David Culley, I think that it's a real chance that David Mills might start because he's never said that Tyrod Taylor was a starting quarterback. And if so, if he does start, I wonder how much of a chip he'll have in week one if he starts against Trevor Lawrence. Does he think, like, this guy really isn't that much better than me, or does he have something to prove? And the other thing I wanted to ask Seth, and I wanted him to elaborate on, when as players do you think, like, wow, this rookie might have a chance to start, or do y'all – keep that to yourself, or do y'all actually like whisper amongst each other like, this dude's pretty good, especially if he's better than the starter that they have in place?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'll tell you one guy. I'm blanking on something. D'Amico Ryan, sorry, for the life of God, I could not remember D'Amico's first name, and it's because of Mecko Collins, I think, or Nico Collins.
Nico Collins.
The Texans draft Nico Collins, and immediately I get Peter Gabriel's song,
Biko,
yeah, in my head.
Yeah.
About South African freedom fighter, Biko, right, something or other. So I was thinking of Nico. So anyway.
D'Amico Ryans.
So D'Amico Ryan was a rookie in 2006. Rookie in 2006. He came in, and I can't remember who the veteran who would have been starting at middle linebacker was at the time, but I remember that D'Amico got the starting job relatively early in camp, and I was kind of crusty old veteran, and I thought, like, what the hell are they doing with this guy? I think I could tell that D'Amico was going to be good within, like, 2 weeks. You could just tell. Like, he commanded respect. He knew his stuff. He was moving around all over the place. And then it showed up on the field in the preseason. The kid was just all over the place, sideline to sideline, just doing all these things. So D'Amico, and he ended up being a rookie of the year. You could tell immediately. There are some guys, I think, with offensive linemen especially. Offensive linemen, it's a little tougher to tell because it's such a technique-heavy position. And some guys just take a little longer to develop. But there are guys, I think sometimes there's guys you can tell don't have it, especially with offensive linemen or defensive linemen. You can just tell they're not tough. Or you can tell that you can tell they're either soft mentally or physically, or they're not strong enough. And that's frustrating because sometimes it'll be a guy that's like a third-round pick. And you know, like, as a defensive lineman, you know, not to be overly negative about it or anything, but some guys you can just tell that they don't have it. But because they were 6'6" or 6'7" and 320 pounds and pretty athletic, the scouts and the GM are invested in the guy, and they'll waste 3 years on him just because nobody gets more fourth, fifth, and sixth chances than a tall offensive lineman, because mm-hmm. these guys are just in love with this notion that somehow this guy that's 6'7" with a big wingspan has just got to make it at some point. Like, no, he's soft and weak, and he doesn't even want to be out here playing football. So there's a spectrum, but some guys you can tell right away. D'Amico Ryans, you could tell almost immediately that he was going to be pretty good.
Could you tell Mario Williams?
Mario, no. Yeah, and part of it was because I think they were doing exactly what you shouldn't do with a rookie that's very versatile potentially because he's so big. They had him playing like four different positions when he was a rookie, and it was really, you remember, plus he had that remember he had Achilles tendonitis. Plantar fasciitis. He had plantar fasciitis. So you didn't really get to see his athleticism go to work in his rookie year. And they were so in love with his athleticism that they thought, well, he'll play left end, he'll play right end. On third down, we can move him down to defensive tackle. I think they might have had a package where he was playing nose tackle at one point, and it was just too much for him. So they had to back off a little bit. I mean, he was a physical freak and a specimen. You could tell that immediately. But it wasn't – I can remember my first year out of football was the next season, 2007, watching on television – And seeing him do some things. And I actually called up. I used to call up the training room just to talk to people every now and then. And I remember talking. I actually asked them to put him on the phone when I called up. I called up Tom Colt, one of the athletic trainers. I was talking to him, and he said that Mario's in there. And I told him he was doing a really, really good job. Just like he'd come a long way in just one year.
So you used to call the training room after you retired, after you were away from football?
Every now and then, you just call to, like, talk to one of the trainers, but, like, they might be like, hey, look, you know, somebody's in here, such and such is, you know, Kylie's in here, you want to talk
awesome.
To him? Yeah.
I love that.
Talk to Kylie. Yeah.
That's cool.
Back when they had land, I don't know if they even have landlines anymore at the stadium.
The only other one I wanted to ask you, and I do want to answer Corey's question about Davis Mills, but as long as he brings up quarterbacks, I wasn't here in 2002, Seth, so I mean, I watched the Texans, obviously, I was away for a small window of time. 2002 was part of that. Was David Carr named the starter right away? I know he was the starter in week one. Was he named the starter right away as the number one overall pick?
I think he pretty much was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was – I don't remember him working as a backup in training camp.
Were the veterans crusty about that, about a rookie quarterback? Especially behind
–
especially with so many other rookies on that offense?
Did Banks come? Was Banks there the first year, or did he come in the second year?
Might have been second. I'll check. But
I don't think at that point everybody kind of knew the deal. Yeah. I think it was like it was a foregone conclusion for a long before anybody ever signed. I think it was almost a foregone conclusion that Carr was going to be the starter. So, and it was an expansion team. The strategy for that team was we had veterans on defense, and on offense we had a couple of veterans, but it was mostly guys that were...
Literally a couple.
Literally two
veterans.
Steve McKinney and Corey Bradford.
That's it.
And, yeah, that was pretty much about it. Let's see. David Carr...
I'm looking at the passing stats here. He was the only one that threw a pass for you guys that year.
Did he play every?
He started all 16 games. The only other people to throw passes that year were James Allen, 2, and Jabbar Gaffney, 1. Jabbar Gaffney, a 39-yard pass. You guys should have started him at quarterback. He averaged 39 yards an attempt on his one attempt that year.
And I don't think any quarterbacks even made it into the game. I'm looking at the roster. There's like David Carr is the only guy between. That's a lot. He was durable that year for taking so many sacks.
No kidding. Wow. All right. 713-572-4610. Do you think Davis Mills is starting week one, Seth? I do not.
I don't think so. No, I think it's going to be Tyrod Taylor. They've talked. I know the caller said that they hadn't named Tyrod Taylor the quarterback. I think they've kept some pretty – they've been pretty adamant about competition. Like, they've been talking about competition a lot. So it was – by the way, Tony Banks was there, and Mike Quinn was there too. Apologize, Mike. But Mike was the kind of guy that Mike had been, you know, around a lot. He was a journeyman quarterback at that point, and he had he knew the deal. So there wasn't going to be any animosity from Mike Quinn. And Banks, I think, knew what the deal was when he signed that he was going to be the backup.
Seth, the second they named Tyrod Taylor the starting quarterback is, especially at this juncture, is it's open season for Deshaun Watson questions at that point. You know what I mean? Like it's.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they can't.
I know you and I have kind of moved on, but the media at large will certainly see that as blood in the water.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, them not naming Tyrod Taylor as the starting quarterback has zero to do with Davis Mills.
Right.
That is 100% about Deshaun Watson.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, 713-572-4610. If you if you want to get in. The great search for the tiger roaming around Houston. There's a happy ending to the tiger search. You can stop looking over your shoulder, Houston. We've got it for you, and you'll be amazed at who was involved in making this happen. Next. I look, this is a sports show, but I feel like when there's something as dangerous as a wild tiger roaming the streets of Houston, we should give a PSA to the people out there.
It's a loose tiger. It's not a wild tiger.
Well, we don't know him personally. He might be wild and crazy. You know what I mean?
India, like a party tiger. He's looked like nothing but playful and joyous whenever. Maybe a little bit curious. He's like, hey, what's that gun you got there? Officer.
That is true. The video footage we have of India the tiger seems to be a very calm tiger.
He didn't look hungry, at least.
Didn't maul that person Thank that God. Was pointing a gun. But after a week of potential sightings and a search that captured the attention of the nation, a tiger spotted roaming a Houston neighborhood was surrendered to authorities on Saturday. The wife of a man in jail on a murder charge contacted BARC. What does BARC stand for, Seth? Do you know?
That's the Bureau of Alcohol and Raging Canines.
It's not what it is at all.
Candidates. What are cats called? The Felidae's.
Yeah. They contacted BARC to turn in the tiger. It's a 9-month-old tiger. Ooh, it's a big tiger for 9 months old.
I know. I heard it was 9 months. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I don't think you really appreciate how big tigers are until one's bearing down
on
you, I
suppose. Be careful, boy. If this tiger ever escapes again, be careful, because this was a big tiger at 9 months old. When it grows up, it's going to be the size of Clifford the Big Red Dog. It's going to be huge. It's going to be like peering into your third-story window of your townhome while sitting down. It's going to be that big.
Yeah, and Carol Baskin will be damning you for not knowing how to handle it. It'll be Carol Baskin will be saying, I don't know why people acted alarmed. They hardly ever maul people and tear their arms off.
Right, yeah.
No, this hardly thing, ever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like a very small percentage of the time. I don't know what you're so worried about. India, the tiger, was unharmed, in good condition. So this is all good.
You're right, though. By the way, though, Sean, you're right. The stupid report in the Chronicle, it says the wife of a man in jail on a murder charge contacted BARC to turn.
How the hell am I supposed to know what that is?
Yeah, what has gone on? Like, this isn't even journalism or anything. This is just basic writing stuff that you learn in like, eighth grade. Yeah. Tell me what BARC is before you just go randomly citing it in an article.
Michael Elliott is the attorney representing, I don't know, help us out, listener.
It's pronounced Victor Hugo Cuevas.
Okay, Michael Elliott, the attorney representing Victor Hugo Cuevas.
Yes.
That is Eddie Perez, our listener who helped us out with that. He's Rosetta Stone for me and Seth in pronunciation.
He's not our translator. He's our pronouncer.
He's our pronunciation expert. Yes. Said at about 6 p.m. on Saturday, the wife of Victor Hugo Cuevas.
Victor Hugo Cuevas.
Received a phone call from the person who had India. The individual was not identified. India is the name of the tiger. They did not immediately face any criminal charges. Okay, this is what I want to know about this person. The return was made anonymously, so the story has a good ending. This is the attorney saying that the animal is in a good, safe place. Now, did this person who have the tiger, was this somebody who Victor Hugo Cuevas left the tiger with? Or was this someone who found the tiger, like, here, tiger, I'm going to hold you, like a stray dog, but it's a tiger?
There's, as we've learned from the what's the tiger documentary? Tiger King
Tiger
documentary
King, yeah.
And various things, like another, if you went down any kind of a rabbit hole learning about that kind of stuff, there's kind of a network of people that deal in exotic animals.
Right.
And the police had said at one point that they're in contact with a lot of these people. And I think I was getting the sense that this tiger was either being passed around or somebody knew where it was and they just wanted to be careful with it. When the cops took it over, when BARC took it over, the Bureau of Alcohol and Rescue of Kitties, Cats, Yeah, that's what it is, the Bureau of Alcohol and Rescue Cats. When Bark took it over, there was a woman and a cop that were just loving on this thing like it was a little kitty cat.
Yeah.
He was rolling around, and the woman was in heaven. So they the cat is very safe and happy.
Okay, good. Yeah, Bark is a – Bark. Several texters. Thank you, texters. Bark is an adoption agency and fostering – for animals. It's a massive animal shelter. I don't think it stands for big-ass roaming cats, Texter.
That's exactly what it is.
7330. I don't think it stands for big-ass roaming cats.
Roaming or Roman? I have a picture of Roman. Like, you know, back in the gladiator days, they used to fix up the big cats, the tigers and lions with armor and everything and have them fight the gladiators.
Now, this is an interesting wrinkle to the story that you brought to my attention. This is an article on KHOU.com. That KHOU Channel 11, as of this weekend, confirmed that the transfer of India, the tiger, to Houston police custody was facilitated by Linda McInvale, the wife of Mattress Mac.
Yeah.
At
this
Club
was,
Westside on Saturday, the Westside Tennis Club, which we know Mattress Mac is a, you know, he's a big part of the Westside Tennis Club over there.
This was by far one of the most creative mattress promotions that Mattress Mac has run. Which was
not a mattress.
I believe the deal was if the Astros swept the Rangers, then Bark wouldn't have to pay for. Yeah, they got a free tiger out of it. So Linda McInvale, good wife that she is, said, "Hey, listen, Jim, we don't have to. You know, we don't have to use one of our own tigers or whatever. I know of one that we can send over to Bark."
I like
so
to
good
think,
job for everybody. You know who wins there? The taxpayers, really.
I like to think that Mattress Mac made a promotion where he said, if we catch this tiger, then you buy $3,000 worth of furniture. All of it is free. $3,000 worth of mattress if we catch this tiger. And then he placed a huge bet in Vegas on the tiger getting caught as a hedge.
Or, either that or, like, he put money down on a rhinoceros somewhere or something.
Exactly.
Either way, he was going to win, whether they found the tiger or they didn't find the tiger. I kind of want to leave that part of it alone, the Linda McInvale part about it. I don't know, like, why are they friends with such allegedly tawdry people?
Yeah, the article seemed to kind of distance them from that. They knew the tiger people, but it didn't seem they were in, like, the total inner circle of friends there. So, I don't know. I mean,
This didn't seem like something that she probably wanted to be identified with.
Right.
Know, this isn't like a publicity-seeking type of thing.
Right.
Or anything.
So there you go.
Yeah,
people,
Bark,
you can
Bark is the city of Houston's animal shelter and adoption facility.
Right. Bureau of Animal...
I guess I've never dealt with Bark.
Bureau of Animal Regulation and Care. You've never dealt with Bark before? Well, what? Snowy the cat's never escaped the house before?
When we were living in Pearland, I dealt with Pearland's animal control people, and they couldn't have been more pleasant, but some bastard left a little puppy at our doorstep. Mm. Not at our doorstep, but I was in an apartment complex at the time. And, we were in this new facility, this new townhouse complex. So it was like 10% full, basically desolate ghost town. On New Year's morning at about 1:30 in the morning, somebody dropped off this puppy, and it was a really cold morning.
Yeah.
And I heard it barking out through my window, so I went out and I had to, and I got a little house for it and put it in my garage and everything and fed it.
Yeah.
And then I had to feed it. You know, on New Year's Day, the animal control wasn't around. So I had to feed this thing and try like hell not to bond with it for 2 days until animal control could come out. They were very, very good.
Yeah, leaving the puppy at somebody's front door, it is in the same category. You're not as bad as somebody who just opens the car door and lets the puppy out to go run free. But you're right there. I'm not going to say the heat level someday for you is going to be as high as the person that just boots a dog out of the car or something like that, but it ain't good. You can't just be
leaving
dogs. Two
lives were destroyed that day, Sean. Both the puppies and me. There's because a part of me died when that little nameless puppy went off with animals. We couldn't keep it for multiple reasons, everybody. Don't judge me, damn it! I'm saying that to myself. Don't judge yourself, Seth. It's okay.
Did you see this chart of the percentage of people that think that they could beat animals in certain fights? Like a tiger's not on here. This is a chart that wound up on my Twitter timeline somehow this weekend. There's actually 6% of people in America that think they could win a fight against a grizzly bear. 6%.
Yeah, I don't. That's a. You know what, Sean? That can't possibly be true because this is without weapons too, right? Like, there's no way. There's no way that do 6% of people actually believe they can beat a grizzly bear? I suppose there's that many people that don't necessarily. Maybe they've never been to a zoo. Or they just don't understand how big a grizzly bear is, so that they think they've seen it in movies. I mean, because the 10%, 9% of people think they could beat either a crocodile or an alligator. I can't tell from the cartoon what that is.
It's a crocodile, yeah.
And now a gorilla, 8% think they can beat a gorilla.
Yeah.
8% think they can beat an elephant. 8% think they can beat a lion. And 6% think they can beat a bear.
A grizzly bear. Yeah, no, Seth, let me be very clear. I truly think there are 6% of people out there that think they can beat a grizzly bear. It's just that they're a delusional 6%. Like, the actual percentage that could beat a grizzly bear is a fraction of a fraction of a percent.
Well, it's zero. Now, without any weapons, you're not beating a grizzly bear.
I think a Chuck Norris, maybe, but other than that,
no, Sean. What? There's not a single human
I'm
being.
Told
that
Chuck
could
Norris
beat
could
bear.
Beat anybody.
There's, I don't think there's a single human being. Let's go up. You know what? Okay, so it goes with 72% of people think they could beat a rat, which, frankly,
I would run the other
28,
way.
Who are these 28% that don't think they could beat a rat?
Me?
Those are the people you need to watch.
Dude, rats jump for the jugular, dude.
You stomp on it and kick at it, and if you have to, you grab it and squeeze
know.
It to
I think
death.
I would lose to a rat for sure.
House cat, I think like people appropriately are nervous about house cats. You would overpower the house cat, even though it would do some damage. You might die of an infected cat scratch. You get that cat scratch fever or something.
Right.
A goose are, I'm surprised that... I'm surprised that only 61% think they could beat a goose because I didn't realize that many people respected the awesome aggressiveness of a goose.
Yes.
I do. Yeah, I do think more people could beat a goose than they realized. Yeah. I mean, it's going to do its damage, but just grab it and break its damn long neck, okay?
Yeah.
And eagles, their talons are huge. I think until you get down to I think a lot of large dogs, 23% say they – see, that's the one where – I think 23% of people, like one out of four people, think that they could definitely beat a large dog. And I don't know where they're so confident about that. Like, I don't know. Like, at least with grizzly bears or elephants or lions, people don't necessarily have a lot of contact with that. Where do you get off thinking that you're going to beat up a large dog in conflict?
I think it depends on the large dog. There's a large sheepdog in our building that's 13 years old. I think I could kick the crap out of that dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he'd put up much of a fight.
That's true if it's a dopey big dog.
Right.
Especially like a diabetic one that the owners are.
Yeah, I feel like you kick it in the right spot and you're set. You could just you could beat that dog in a fight for sure.
But like have you ever been jumped on by like a frisky pit bull? A friendly frisky pit bull?
I've not.
It's terrifying.
I'll bet.
In that not that you're worried. I knew a guy that used to be in one of my neighborhoods that had a couple of really friendly pit bulls. So it was never terrifying. Like, I didn't think that those dogs were going to hurt me.
Yeah.
But they're so strong. They jump up on you and almost just knock you over. And I'm a big guy. This is back when I was playing football. I was 310 pounds or so. It's incredible how strong they are.
All right, what does Vegas think of the Texans' chances this year? We've got one measurement that paints a potentially historic picture for the 2021 Houston Texans. That's next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. So Seth, the verdict is in, with at least with the Action Network, and you and I talked about this last week for the Texans. They are indeed underdogs in all 17 games as of right now for the upcoming season. Their best chance at a win, according to the odds makers, as of May 17th, now these things can change, obviously, and they will change during the season. And obviously these spreads aren't going to all hold up. But you can bet on all 17 Texan games if you want. You think the Texans are going to be a little friskier than the general public does? There's an opportunity here. You're going to get points in literally every Texans game this year if you want to bet them right now. So if you think they're going to be – Seth, you're one of those people. You, at least early on, you think the Texans are going to be friskier than some do.
Now,
friskier.
Every time I say that, somebody interprets that as me claiming they're going to win 14 games or something.
Right.
I don't think they're going to lay down it. Because it rarely happens that way.
Yeah.
Teams rarely lay down and die, even if they go 0-16 or in this case 0-17 this year. They rarely lay down and die for every single opponent. And I do think that with when Tyrod Taylor is quarterback, they've got the potential versus lesser defenses, I think, to make some hay. They'll have a chance to do some things. They're not completely devoid of any offensive talent. So the defense is still going to be a big concern because I think they've got some things to watch at linebacker, but not much added pass rush to speak of. Regardless, there'll be some close games. I'm not gonna predict that they go 0-17. I think they'll win. My overly optimistic view is that they'll win over three games this year.
Okay.
There you go.
Three and a half. You take the over on 3.5. You win your bet. So the smallest.
Remember, it's a 17 game season.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. You get an extra opportunity to cover the spread and win a game. The closest spread is Jacksonville in week one. The Texans are a 1-point, according to this particular outlet, a 1-point underdog in that game. Next closest is the Jets coming to NRG Stadium in week 12. The Texans are 1.5-point underdogs to Zach Wilson in the New York Jets at home in week 12. And then the next closest would be Carolina in week 3. So two of the smallest three spreads in which the Texans are underdogs. That's a 4-point spread. In week three.
Carolina in week three.
I actually like the Texans in that. I think the Texans in week one and the Texans in week three are good bets. There, sue me. I mean, the Jags are starting a rookie quarterback. Granted, he's the number one overall pick, but hell, you're getting points at home. There's no film to study on David Culley and the Texans. It's all new people. It's not like the Jags are anything great. I'll take a point and a half at home if I'm the Texans, and I'll gladly take 4 points at home against a team that has to travel here for a Thursday night game with Sam Darnold as their freaking quarterback.
This is how it'll happen if it works out versus the Jaguars. Rookie quarterback Trevor Lawrence will be managed carefully by Urban Meyer, and I think it will be as much of a rushing threat as a passing threat in that game. But he's never seen NFL complexity before, and the Texans brought in some guys who can cover as linebackers. You know, are they perennial all pros or what have you? No. But I think they have the ability to show him something that he didn't see in college and, you know, jump into a zone without Trevor Lawrence realizing it. So Trevor Lawrence with a couple of picks and there you have it. So there's that. Now the Panthers are one of the teams that still potentially could get Deshaun Watson. Although it does seem like, I mean, the Sam Darnold move obviously was at least giving up on that dream a little bit for them.
Yeah, they feel like they've got a firmer quarterback situation than, say, Philadelphia or Denver, who I think are also teams that would be in the mix for Deshaun. If he all of a sudden became available, cleansed enough to where you can maximize the trade package for him. All right, Seth, watch this. Watch me give Texan fans optimism from a factoid that should be just harrowing for you. The Texans are double-digit underdogs, 10 points or more, in 6 of the 17 games, including the biggest spread on the board for the entire season in the NFL right now. The two teams that faced off in a playoff game a year and a half ago at NRG Stadium. The Texans beat the Bills in a playoff game in January of 2020. They are now 14.5-point underdogs at Buffalo in Week 4. But here's the optimism I'm going to give you. There are 6 games in which the Texans are double-digit underdogs. 2 of those games are at Cleveland, 12-point underdogs, and at Miami, 10.5-point underdogs. I will remind you, Texan fan, as I take a huge swig of whiskey before I say this, that Cleveland and Miami within the last 2 or 3 years were both teams that were tanking for Tua, picking number 1 in the draft. They were both laughing stocks. I say all that to say it can turn around. There can be a light at the end of the tunnel. Just 2 or 3 years ago, the Dolphins and the Browns were the 2021 Houston Texans. And now look at them now, Seth. Double-digit wins, double-digit favorites against bad teams. It can get turned around in the NFL. Nick Caserio, we trust. And here I slug more whiskey again.
The one, I remember we were talking with our boss after the show, must have been on Thursday or so, where I was trying to think of some of the teams that had been so forlorn and then turned it around. I think San Francisco in the 2-year period when they hired Chip Kelly, and the year before him, they hired one Jim Tomsula.
Yeah.
Who might have been one of the most ridiculous coaching hires in the history of professional football. And that's saying something. Nobody expected Jim Tomsula to be there long. Jim Tomsula himself seemed kind of like a pinch me, am I dreaming? I'm not sure this is even what I want about the entire thing. And it was a disaster. It was a mess. Now, San Francisco was coming off of some successful seasons. That's the difference there. Like they had whatever had gone wrong with Harbaugh and everything, just kind of you had more recent reminders of just how good they could be and had been recently, but they were kind of in the depths of despair there for a couple of years.
No doubt.
They turned it around very quickly and ended up being a couple of hires. And I'm not even sure John Lynch is actually a good GM.
Yeah.
And they turned it around.
Funny you should mention San Francisco, 12-point favorite against the Houston Texans this
year.
So there's another one.
So the point I always make with NFL teams is that they're much smaller organizations than their value would suggest. Yes, they're worth $2, 3, 4 billion, but they're small organizations of only, less than 200 total people in them. They can be turned around with a couple of key hires at any given moment. So does that help us for 2021? Not necessarily, except that I do think Caserio has a really good shot at being one of the guys that needs to turn it around. I'm skeptical at this point that Culley has what it takes to be a successful NFL head coach.
There's one other team that's an underdog in every single one of their games this year. To not any great surprise, it's the Detroit Lions. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Seth, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are favored in every single one of their games this year. Are people buying too high on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I see these topics on TV, on these debate shows. Will the Buccaneers go undefeated this year? And I'm like, I know they won the Super Bowl last year, and I know they won the Super Bowl in fairly convincing fashion. Look, that matchup was perfect for them that day. The Chiefs were missing both of their tackles. Brady as an underdog is a great thing to back in a game. They were an underdog in that game. People forget they were 11-5 last year. It's not like they were world beaters all season long.
They were 11-5, but in the games where it didn't go well, it looked a whole lot like it has at other times in Tom Brady's history when he's trying to work with new receivers or trying to bring guys into the fold.
Yeah.
Like they weren't on the same page. Not everybody was comfortable with what they were doing. It seemed like as the season progressed, other than where they had their hiccups here and there, guys got on the same page, and when everybody was healthy, it made a big difference. The defense is probably the big factor there. That it's hard to predict from one season to the next, like defenses staying consistently good. If this is the rule, if you're a historically good defense, you're almost definitely not going to be at that same level the next year.
Mm-hmm.
The Tampa Bay Bucs defense was not historically good, but they were a top-5 defense. I think they could end up being another really good defense next year. So I think they're going to be really good. Sean, this is what I'm going to have to tell you. Just like earlier, this is, this whole Deshaun situation over these last couple months, I've had to slowly, help you come to realize that attorneys aren't always being honest when they say things publicly.
That's true.
You've learned that hard lesson, right?
Yeah, big time.
It's hard. It was like you were learning about one of your childhood heroes not being quite the man you thought he was.
Yes.
Yes, it's true that lawyers sometimes don't tell the truth. I'm going to tell you this about the whole can the Bucks go undefeated conversation.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, Sean, for the last 30 years of your life, every single time, sometime around maybe May, June, July, you've been upset with ESPN for asking if a team can go undefeated this year.
Do you think so?
That's a standard every year.
Yeah.
Can such and such go undefeated? Last year it was the Chiefs. Will the Chiefs go undefeated?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's easy. It's easy. See, what did it do? It got you angry.
Yeah.
And then you're going to debate about it. And you're going to watch Stephen A, And you're going to be – and you'll be – later on this afternoon, you'll be saying, "Dadgummit, I usually don't abide by what Stephen A says, but I'll agree with him right now."
Yeah, yep. I got to tell you, these last few months, what I've learned, Seth? I'm not nearly as smart as I thought I was. That's what I'm
saying. No. It's not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter of having a trusting nature.
Yeah, it's true. Naivete.
Yeah. You're more naive than you thought you were.
I guess so, yeah. Someday when I turn 62, I won't be naive anymore.
The danger is, you got to figure it out before you're 70, because that's when you could start falling prey for the Hello.
Scams.
This is the government.
Oh, my God.
Press 1, and we will not come raid your office right now. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you're giving up your credit card.
There are going to be more wealthy people faking being a Nigerian prince when I turn 70 than ever before. It'll be a new record.
By the way, I don't know if this is smart or not, but a few times, I got to start recording the calls when I do it. I've actually, like, pressed 1 to go through and talk to the fraudsters before to try to talk to some... to some young outsourcer from some foreign country about like how what they're doing
What'd
is morally
learn?
Wrong. I don't think I've turned a life around yet. I've tried. It's a little bit frustrating. They hang up. Like it's gratifying because they hang up on me.
Okay.
But I'll be like, hey, look, what are you doing, man? You know, you realize you're stealing from old people here. Like I didn't fall for this, but you're stealing. I think in a lot of the countries where they get people to do it, for one, they're either criminals that are doing it. You know, I'm not talking about the masterminds. I'm talking about the people that are actually making the
soldiers.
Calls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like people working at the phone tree.
Right.
I think there's probably some element of, you know, I'm living in this country where the per capita income is like, you know, $27 a month.
Yeah.
There's no American that's going to tell me like, or make me feel bad about ripping them off.
Right.
think that's what they probably feel.
But that's cool. It's like an intervention that you do for them.
Yeah, but then I feel kind of weird about like, hey, listen, I'm sitting here in my climate-controlled 72-degree house sipping on a coffee that a magical Keurig machine just made for me. Now let me preach to you about the morality of you trying to take my money.
Seth, text message. So my 50-hour-old son, so this is somebody whose baby was just born 2 days ago. My 50-hour-old son keeps giving my phone the side eye every time Seth's voice comes on.
Like the side eye now, I think his side eye, because he can't move his head yet all that well.
Yeah.
So the side eye, like an interested. I'm like, got it. Did he say got to start him young?
Got to start him young, yeah.
You got to play. That is a prodigy is what you have, I believe.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. I like that. Seth, I like to think that he is vibing your takes this little two-day old. He's like, you know what? Really good point about David Culley, Seth. It's a very, very good point.
Hey, let me tell you a 30-second little tearjerker of a story. I don't know if it's a tearjerker when I truncate it down to 30 seconds, but this is here's the shortened version of my you know what? No, I'm not going to tell this story. It's kind of a personal one. Never mind.
Wow.
I apologize. I'm sorry.
Sorry, audience.
I'm sorry. I'll tweet out a video of a kid who just saw color for the first time with some special sunglasses that they gave him. That's a tearjerker too, just as good.
This is the replacement.
I'm sorry to give everybody emotional blue balls. Yeah. I apologize. I totally apologize. I'm sorry.
That's incredible. All right, David Culley on Rookies. I tell you, you want a replacement for Seth's emotional story? Wait till you hear David Culley talk about Rookies, my friend.
Such a jerk. I'm sorry.
Much different sounding than the head coach last season. We'll compare, we'll contrast Texan head coaches next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.